Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Today, I am in studio with author and spiritual guide, Anita Morjani, who empowers hundreds and hundreds of thousands around the world to embrace harmonious health and a vibrant lifestyle by learning to truly love oneself in the face of all life's challenges. And today, we're here to talk about Anita's brand new book, Sensitive is the New Strong, The Power of Empaths in an Increasingly Harsh World. Welcome, Anita, to Voice Rising.
Thank you so much, Kara. It's a pleasure to be here and an honor.
Thank you. So first of all, Anita, congratulations. You do have a brand new book, Sensitivity is the New Strong. And I would love to dive deeper into that subject on empaths, because I think there are many people that really are going to profit and are going to connect with all the wisdom that you share in the gifts that empaths and sensitives carry for our world. Shall we begin?
Yes, please.
Very beautiful. So let's just start in a very easy place. So when you were a little kid, did you sense that you were overly sensitive or very empathic, or did you just feel somehow different?
I felt somehow different, but I didn't understand in what way I was different. So looking back now, I realize that, yes, I've been super sensitive, empathic, or been an empath, and also highly intuitive my entire life. But you know, we tend to assume that other people think the same way we do, but that's not the case. And I always had trouble fitting in. I didn't fit in at school. I didn't fit in my community, in my parents' culture. I just felt I didn't fit in anywhere my entire life.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of your work and other people's work, is that once we start to name it a little bit better, we can also support children and other people to be able to tune in and realize that it's a gift, right? Being sensitive is a gift. It's not just that we're weird and misfits. We also have gifts to bring to the world. Anita, you open your book, and this I found so touching because I'm all about voice, and you open your book with the following lines. I'd love to read them if I may. May I read the lines that open the book?
Yes, absolutely. Ah.
Okay, the lines say, to the gentler souls who walk among us, the sensitive and empathetic ones who give of themselves tirelessly without a thought for their own needs, self-sacrificing among us who don't know how to receive, and then you continue, you have silenced your voice and made yourself so small so others can feel big. You have dimmed your light for so long that you don't know how to shine anymore. You've read all the spiritual books, all the self-help books. You've prayed, meditated, forgiven everyone who has wronged you and forgiven them again, only to find that while you've been so engaged, the world outside has been hijacked by the louder, more aggressive voices among us. And then you say, this book is for you. Your voice is vital and your light is essential. And so this is why I was so touched, because you do understand the power of voice and frequency.
Yes, I absolutely understand the power of voice and frequency. And the thing is that one of the things that compelled me to write this book is that the very people who are able to actually shift the energy of this planet, or the very people whose energy we need in this planet right now, because we are sorely lacking in sensitivity and empathy and compassion, and all these things are sorely lacking in our governments, our education system, our medical system. So the very people whose voices we need now are the ones who are the most silent, because they're hiding from the world, because they feel the world is too harsh for their sensitivity. And that's who this book is for.
Yeah, it's so true. We truly need each and every empath and sensitive person to be strengthened in their voice and also in their gifts. So how do we know, if we're listening to the show, how do we know if we are empaths? Or you also make a distinction in the book between an empath and someone who's highly sensitive, or a sensitive person. Which qualities or personality traits does an empath have that might make us aware that we may too be an empath?
So basically, an empath tends to absorb the feelings of the people around them without even realizing it. And so this is why it's important for an empath to realize that they're an empath, so that they can become aware that they have a tendency to do this. So basically, somebody can be highly sensitive and not be an empath. And so here's the distinction. A highly sensitive person can be extremely intuitive about how the people around them are feeling. You can be intuitive about, like, whether somebody around you is sad or happy or feeling depressed. And because you're intuitive, you will immediately know what their needs are, and you can go and help them. And so highly intuitive people or highly sensitive people make extremely good healthcare workers. They're great nurses, they're great doctors, they're great healers, and because you kind of intuitively know what people need to feel better. Now, an empath has all of those qualities as well, but an empath goes one step further, where you not only know what the other person is feeling, but when you walk away, like let's say you leave the room, you are actually carrying that person's energy in your energy, and you may not be aware of it. So as an example, a highly sensitive person could be someone like a nurse or a doctor who is treating patients all day long, and then they can walk away feeling exhilarated that they did a great day's work in being able to fulfill other people's needs. An empath will walk away feeling completely depleted because they've actually absorbed the trauma of everybody that they've been treating that day. So that's kind of the difference between the two.
Thank you. You spoke about it a little bit before. You said that we need these voices, and we need for the sensitive and empathic people to come into our politics, into our education, into our healing. And yet we also know at this time that we have a world that is in peril. We have mass shootings, we have a pandemic, we have a climate crisis. I mean, the list is very long. We watch the news, we see that there isn't the harmony needed for the gentle souls, and yet we need to bring them, to empower them more. So what do you suggest? We are given this conditioning that it's a dog-eat-dog world, that the, you know, the survival of the fittest, that we have to kind of push through and hit each other on the head if we want to, you know, be first. And what do you suggest? Because most of them are running to the woods or getting a small cottage by the sea.
Exactly.
and maybe doing great work too. But I had a revelation once with voice work, and you know, I'd like to know your thoughts. But it was the amount of energy that the world would have that would be made free if everybody could feel comfortable in their voice, because a lot of people choose to run away to the woods or the mountains because the world shuts them down.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Right? And it would be such a release of vibrant, healthy, great energy if they weren't hiding in the woods.
Exactly, 100%. So basically, like right now, if somebody is sensitive, if somebody is very compassionate, empathic, it's seen as a weakness. When you ask somebody what is your definition of strength, they will rarely ever say sensitivity is a form of strength. If they do, it's because they've been exposed to this kind of work that I'm talking about. But conventionally, that is not sensitivity, compassion, empathy are not seen as strengths. When you ask people what is strength, they will say, "Oh, strength is being highly competitive and winning at all costs, being ruthless, being bold, being all these things." And being able to handle a dog-eat-dog world, and all these things are seen as strengths. And so when you have children who are sensitive, they're actually told, don't be so sensitive, especially boys. It's worse for boys. Mm-hmm. Boys are told, boys don't cry, man up. You're not going to survive in the world if you're sensitive. And women and girls, if they want to succeed, they have to actually suppress their feminine qualities, and they have to become more like men, quote unquote, in order to succeed in the corporate world, when in actuality our corporate world is very lacking in feminine qualities. And so basically what we have done as a culture is that we have marginalized these traits and made people feel that if they have these traits, they're not going to succeed. They're going to be losers in the world. And so when people have traits such as ruthlessness and competitiveness to the point of winning at all costs, we admire those people. We put them up on a pedestal. We don't admire traits like people who collaborate who innately are more collaborative as opposed to competitive. We don't even notice them. They're invisible to us. We reward competition and competitors and people who win at all costs, and we reward ruthlessness, and we admire them, and we put them on pedestals and appoint them as our leaders. We would need to start by encouraging empathy and compassion in children in schools. We would need to redefine what the word strong really means. We would need to start saying that sensitivity is a very good thing. Compassionate is a very good thing. Empathy is a good thing. It is a sign of strength. And if you think about this, even before COVID, the way, the direction that our world was going, we couldn't keep going the way we were going. We just couldn't. We would have self-combusted in some way or other. Think about what all our governments were doing. Of all the major countries, they were spending all their money on nuclear weapons, warfare. And we basically spend way more money killing each other than we do feeding each other. That's the kind of mentality we have as a planet, as a culture, as a race, which speaks volumes about how unevolved we are. And we demonize things like compassion and sensitivity, saying, "Oh, those are weaknesses, and you'll never get ahead." And people who are weak finish last, and things like that. So, as we continue to do this, we are, as a culture, fostering a very aggressive, warmongering race of people. So we need to start by becoming aware that we are actually doing this by teaching that to our children. We need to teach our children different values so that our future leaders will be different. And so it's just super interesting how really, like, one of the a universal understanding or law, whether it is by law, whether it is in spirituality, no human being has the right to take the life of another human being. You know, like, mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. in spiritual terms, that is the worst thing you can do, is to take the life or cut short the life of another human being. And even legally, you cannot kill someone. If you killed someone or I killed someone, we would go to jail. Yet governments seem to be able to get away with training armies of young people in their country to go out and kill hordes of people in other alien countries. Who gives them the permission to do that? Like, who, how did they get any authority to do that, and from whom? We, the people, put them in power. And that completely goes against all our intrinsic spiritual values of any sensitive, empathic, compassionate person. And so these are the kinds of things that I bring up in people to make them think, and to make them think, wait a minute, maybe we need to make the world a little more pleasant for empathic people to have a voice. Maybe we need to start identifying empathy, compassion, sensitivity as strengths, because otherwise we would be at the brink of our own extinction. If we mm-hmm. want to evolve as a race and as a species, we need to embrace compassion and sensitivity. I don't think that COVID was just a random thing that happened by accident. I think, you know, like, there has been nothing in that I know in history that has brought the whole world to its knees the way COVID has. And I mm-hmm. believe it was almost like a divine intervention to stop us on our tracks, because we couldn't keep going the way we were. We just couldn't, as a planet. We were on the brink of our own self-destruction.
Yeah, the interesting thing, too, is if we can come together to stop air travel and to put mask mandates, et cetera, lockdowns in place, we can also come together on these important issues like climate crisis and animal extinction, et cetera. Anita, we're going to take a very small break, and then we're going to be back with more of Anita Morjani's newest book.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
This is Kathy Beal, host of Celestial Compass, featuring astrology you can use. Celestial Compass points you to what's going on in the sky and what you can do with it down here on Earth. We also explore fun, effective, and cosmic tools for navigating this adventure we call life. Join me the first and third Monday of the month at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Celestial Compass. It's enlightening, entertaining, and empowering.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. I'm your host, Cara Johnstead, and with me in studio today is Anita Morjani, author of the new book, Sensitive is the New Strong, The Power of Empaths, an Increasingly Harsh World. Anita, we were just talking about this harsh world and our, I would say, our responsibility, actually, to educate and to bring compassion and resilience and sensitivity into the lives of our kids, into education, into everything we do. The first book that launched you into the spotlight was Dying to Be Me, and it talked about your journey from cancer to near death to true healing. And in this book, you always share with your audience that you learned profound lessons. And one of the lessons that you learned is that we are our pure essence and pure love and pure divinity, pure spirituality, and that we're so interconnected. And before, you were talking about this, you know, being in competition and being competitive instead of being collaborative, instead of being interconnected. Is this actually what tears at our souls, that we have lost this connection to other dimensions or to the spiritual world? If you go into a shopping mall, you don't really feel it, right? You don't, yeah. You don't feel. Or I was saying to someone the other day on the show, it even starts at our dinner table. When we go to the supermarket, there are only one or two apple sorts of apples, and they always, nobody has spots or nobody has a little wrinkle. Like, everything is normed, the same size bananas, same size peppers. Right? It's everything is kind of put into a box.
Yes. Yes. So go ahead.
That's a good one. But how can we get to that place that we not only bring empathy in, but that we honor the multifaceted consciousness of all that is? I think it even starts, I went to the funeral of my grandmother, for example, in Wisconsin, and they didn't even lower the body into the earth anymore because they were afraid what people might feel. Oh. They made us go back to the church and eat cookies and drink coffee because they weren't able to process, or people weren't able or allowed to process emotions. Right. Yeah. Which was for me a shock, because these are the moments when we do feel together, when we're standing in those moments of birth, of death, of illness, when the empathy and the compassion can truly be shared with each other.
Exactly.
And I thought, wow, I'm in Wisconsin and I'm burying my grandmother, and I'm not allowed, as a community, we're not allowed to see that moment of ashes to ashes, dust to dust. And it seems like everything has been sanitized, right?
Yes, and it's true. And just going to the point where you say that we're all connected, that is absolutely true, that we are all connected. And, you know, when we are, so what happened with me is that I was supposed to die back in 2006, and I was in a coma and left my body, and I realized that all of us are actually connected, but mm-hmm. our physical bodies lead us to believe that we're all separate beings. Mm-hmm. And when we leave our bodies, we suddenly realize, oh my gosh, my consciousness is connected to your consciousness, and it's connected to everybody else's consciousness. All of us, our souls are our consciousness. It's like, when I'm not in my body, I feel what you feel. And we're all part of one source. We can call it source or God, or anything we want to. But each one of us, each physical person, is an expression of source. We are all facets of source. We are all mm-hmm. part of the same source, but we are different, expressing in different facets, in different bodies, in a different circumstances, different life. And so when we fight each other, kill each other, compete against each other, it's because we believe we're all separate. And it's only when we die, we realize, oh my gosh, here we are, all of us actually connected, and we're fighting each other. It's almost like, sometimes I use the analogy of a mirror ball, like, you know, in a disco back mm-hmm, in the mm-hmm. when you mirror balls. And imagine if you are, you think you're a separate being and separate from everyone else, and you are one of those, and if you think about a mirror ball, what it does is that it refracts little dots or little specks of light on the wall around the room. So imagine if these little specks of light all think that they are individual beings, and they're all competing with each other, fighting with each other. And then when they die, they realize, oh my gosh, I am one of those mirror tiles on this giant mirror ball. And all those other specks of light, or all those other physical people, they were all one of the other tiles on this same mirror ball. We're all part of the same mirror ball. So mm-hmm. if we're beating each other up, if we're harming each other, we're all harming the same one whole. We're all one whole mirror ball in this case, or one whole God, or one source. We are harming the same essence. We are all of the same essence.
And that's why it's ever so natural that when we watch the news and see another school shooting, that it pains us, that it hurts us. Even though it's in Ohio and we might be living in Oregon, we still feel it. And I think this desensitization, my goodness, working between many languages here, is really profound how we're able to just bombard ourselves with these images and this news, and we are almost led to believe, but that's the way it is. And it's not natural to be having shootings every weekend in a country. It's not the way we want to live. So we're born, we all of us remember also as children, I mean, all of us who have ever parented or had friends who have had children, we see that very strong intuitive connection to everything around that child. They're, you know, sometimes licking stones and curious for hair and just the curiosity and the beauty. And we somehow do support that they have a very imaginative world. And yet then we're also herded into a educational system which only talks about the five senses. You talk about that in your book. You talk about living as a sixth sensory being. You talk about honoring also that inner voice, the intuition, the imagination, and daring to do so in a five sensory world. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So basically, we are sixth sensory beings. You look at any child, any baby, that their senses are very, very strong. Their intuition is very strong, and they know when their mother or father comes into the room. You know, even if their eyes are closed, or even if they can't see them, they can sense. They can immediately sense if they're being picked up by a parent or a stranger. Their sense is so strong. And if we're born with such heightened intuition, it means this is what we're meant. It means it's natural. It's part of who mm-hmm. we are. And yet, for some reason, our world, our education just denies that sense. And if we continue to feel that sense as we grow up, if we try to hold on to it, we're told that we're weird, we're different, we're woo-woo, it's your imagination, you're crazy. And we're told this. And so then that's how we kind of stop listening to it, and we start to deny it. We deny our intuition just to be able to fit in, just to get mm-hmm. approval. Mm-hmm. We deny who we truly are. And so what I tell people is that you need to be brave enough to re-embrace that intuition, that sixth sense, which is very much a part of you. And the reason why it's challenging to embrace it is because we live in a world that is created by people who believe we are five sensory beings, and it's created for five sensory beings. It's not created for people with intuition. And what's super interesting is that we are developing technology to compensate for the fact that we're not using our intuition, you know, like like current technology is constantly trying to intuit things for us, trying to be, you know, like smartphones and so on. In actuality, we have the ability to do a lot of things that many of our devices do for us. And when animals show their intuition, we don't even question it. You know, I had a dog for many years who knew 5 minutes before I was going to walk in the door, even like, and this was, I was not in earshot. I was not within the realm of smell. I was like a mile away, but he knew I would walk in the door in 5 minutes, and he would park himself at the door and would be wagging his tail. And, and our animals do this. And there was a tsunami back in 2006 or something, a Boxing Day tsunami in Asia, off the coast of Indonesia, where when the tsunami hit, a lot of the hotels and resorts and tourist areas were really hit badly, and a lot of lives were lost. But what they noticed much later was that not many animals succumbed to it. And what they found was that the animals had actually moved to higher ground before the tsunami. So they knew it was coming. They sent the tsunami and they moved to higher ground. And this is the kind of thing, if our animals can do it, we can do it. And we were born with this, but we have denied it and suppressed it. And when somebody says something like, oh, I sense this, we kind of go, oh, that's, that person's crazy, or that's my crazy psychic aunt. And we make them feel like there's something wrong with them. And then we develop devices, technology to help us to be able to detect these things, which we innately have the ability to do already.
Yeah, even if you think of, actually, when I was in India, I visited a man and he could really feel my pulse, like almost with nothing, right? And now we have pulsometers, little plastic things that go on top of our finger, because we used to just put our hand on our wrist and try to feel it. Now we have these machines that we wrap with cables and it's crazy. You talk about in the book that empaths, you say, the popular kids phrase, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, does not hold true for empaths. I totally agree with this, because I work with so many wonderful artists and clients who one word has shut them down for many years, one criticism. And you talk about that empaths are, and sensitives are very harsh even with themselves, and that any criticism they take, you know, 10 times harder, if not 100 times harder. How can we, well, the one thing I guess is we can be much more aware as people dishing out criticism what we're doing, but how can we support sensitive and empathic people not to be paralyzed for many years because one person told them you're not a good writer, or you shouldn't be singing, or you shouldn't, you know, you have no talent.
So it's, so yeah, being aware that we have a tendency to do this is one thing. And if somebody like someone that is a good coach, teacher, healer can actually point out to an empath that you have this innate tendency to do this. So, and then an empath, you know, first of all, So the first thing is awareness that they have a tendency to do this, to be overly sensitive to criticism. The second thing an empath needs to do is to then tune in and ask themselves, what is it that makes me happy or makes my heart sing? So, for example, if it makes me happy to be a singer or a musician, but I've shut myself down because I was criticized, then what the empath or the sensitive person needs to realize is that if it makes me happy to sing, it means that that there is a reason why it makes me happy. I need to do it for myself, for my own happiness. Mm-hmm. And so a question that most people don't really ask themselves is, what makes me happy? What makes me feel joyful? What makes my heart sing? And so even if you're not good at those things, you need to do them, because chances are you're not as bad as you think you are. It's your highly critical self that is making you believe you're bad at it. And to give you an example that's not quite about a skill set like singing or anything, but it's when I came back from my journey through cancer and all that. And so I was sharing my story, but I got criticized and I got pushback from some people who were probably from mainstream, who were probably from medicine, who were debunkers. Mm-hmm. You always get debunkers for this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I shut down as well. I stopped sharing my story until my story was discovered by Dr. Wayne Dyer, who is an inspirational speaker, writer, author. And he contacted me and said, you need to write a book and get your story out into the world. And I said that, but I don't want to face debunkers and naysayers. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, there will always be critics, no matter who you are or what you do. Even if you are the king of the universe, you will have critics. But what you have to do is focus on the people who are being helped by you. Just focus mm-hmm. on them and don't focus on the critics. So that's mm-hmm. what I would say to people, is that if you're a musician or something, focus on the people who love your music or who are moved by your work, and don't focus on the critics. Do it for them. So that's what I've been doing ever since I got that advice, is that even if I get critics or anything, I don't focus on them. I focus on the number of people that write to me and say, thank you so much for writing this. It really helped me.
Beautiful. Anita, we're going to take another very short break, and then we're going to be back with more on talking about empathy and sensitivity and the transformative role it plays in our lives.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Life is a flow, and enlightenment is simply harmonizing with the way life really is. Then you find that life is effortless, benevolent, and free of all suffering. Hey everyone, this is GP Walsh, and I want to invite you to my brand new radio show that's launching right here on OM Times Radio, called The Flow of Enlightenment. I've been a spiritual teacher for decades, and my greatest pleasure is being able to share with you these deep and highly practical spiritual ideas. So join me in The Flow every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and let yourself be transformed.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. There is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to Black and Brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Hi, welcome back to Voice Rising. I'm your host, Cara Johnstead, and with me in studio today is Anita Morjani, author of the new book, Sensitive is the New Strong. We were just talking about critics and criticism. You talk in your book, Anita, about the aversion to criticism that we naturally have as empaths has us leaning towards an addiction to approval, which is not always good, right? Yeah. Because sometimes we focus on the people that are really nourishing us and nurturing us. And sometimes we're so in need of approval that we end up, well, I guess I don't know if I want to say wasting, but we end up getting ourselves into situations which are not necessarily positive.
Yes.
So how are those two linked, the aversion to criticism and leaning towards the addiction to approval?
Yes. Yeah, so because we have this aversion to criticism, we tend to lose ourselves. Sometimes we will do, so we will avoid confrontation, and we have a tendency to not really express who we are, to be mm-hmm. really afraid of, you know, expressing our truth or our music or our talent or our skill. So we lose a part of who we are because we're so afraid of criticism. So empaths need to be aware that they have a tendency to do this. And then, as you say, on the opposite end, is that when we get approval, we feel safe when we get approval for an action. And maybe that action is something that doesn't serve us, you know, mm-hmm. maybe mm-hmm. something that someone wants us to do to fulfill their agenda. It could be in a situation, if you imagine, even in a work situation where the boss wants you to do something that serves them, but it's not going to help you get ahead in your work or get a promotion. It's something that purely makes them look good. And so they keep praising you for doing that. And so you get stuck in that role because you're so addicted to that praise, to getting that praise, mm-hmm. and you feel mm-hmm. so safe in that role. But you're capable of so much more, but you're afraid to step out because you're afraid of the criticism, and you become so addicted to getting this praise that you stay in this safe role where you're always getting praise, and you never move on to become who you truly are capable of being if you spread mm-hmm. your wings mm-hmm. and took a risk with criticism. The other mm-hmm. thing that it does, it sets you up for, is that when you become addicted to this criticism, again, say in this, let's say in this situation with your boss, and then let's say one day you become addicted to the praise, is what I mean. You become so addicted to the praise that this person is giving you that one day this person is just having a bad day and they don't give you that praise. Immediately you feel, oh my God, what did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. How can I make it better? And you contort yourself to try to do it, like whatever it is that you're doing, your work, in 10 different ways to try and meet their approval. You'll stay late, you'll do this, you'll do that, just to try and win them, because you think it's because of you that they didn't give you approval today, but maybe they had a fight with their spouse or something, or, you know, so that's the other downside of having an addiction to approval. And mm-hmm. so I encourage people to work through all of these things, you know, through different exercises that I offer, like learning to love yourself and doing something good for yourself every day and taking small baby steps of allowing yourself to be who you are and showing yourself to the world and so on.
Yeah, you also talk about, well, there are two things that from my work, I just was sitting there and cheering and saying, yay, she named it. The one was that when we're sensitive and empathic and when we know that there's this oneness happening, it's very difficult when someone comes and says, you need to draw hard boundaries, or you need to put on tougher skin, or you need to, draw this line. Because yeah. we don't think in lines, so it doesn't really work for us. What I always tell people is you need to strengthen your frequency, which is exactly what you're doing with your work. And then you have this wonderful insight, which, again, I was applauding while sitting with your book on my balcony. I was like, yes, you talk about that empaths tend to be so in a way, in surrender, they get drawn also to the spiritual scene. But in the spiritual scene, we also know that there's a lot of that's ego. Ego's negative. You need to overcome your ego. And ego is seen as something not good. And you make the difference. My language today. The differentiation. Oh my goodness. Yes, good. So we'll work as a team. You feel what I want to. you feel what my tongue wants to do.
You're very skilled in languages, so very.
Yeah.
Speak as many languages.
So you talk about how the empath actually, it's not the egocentric life that we want, but we do need a healthy I am, which is a healthy ego. And I was so happy to read that. And I think it's going to help so many people that are sensitive and empaths to realize it's okay to say, I'm a writer, I'm a singer, I'm a doctor, I am.
Yeah.
I am good at this. I am. It's okay.
Yeah.
And I'm still spiritual, right?
Exactly. Because one of the things I have noticed, and I notice it because this is how I was, is that empaths and sensitive people, even if we don't realize we're empaths and sensitive people, just by our nature, we are attracted to spiritual teachings. And other thing that empaths and highly sensitive people tend to have is we have what I call a repressed ego. In other words, we tend to be unable to we're so sensitive to criticism, we're unable to see our own strengths and our own gifts and how service oriented we are innately, and we can't see that in ourselves. But when we take in these spiritual messages like, oh, ego is bad, you have to transcend your ego, what it does is that it makes someone who's already ego repressed, it makes them even more like suppress who they are. It doesn't do them any good. If it was up to me, if I'm a spiritual teacher teaching empaths, I would teach empaths to strengthen your ego and make it to fortify it so that you develop a healthy ego. Being egotistical is different. Egotistical is when you only care about yourself and not anybody else and not the condition of the planet. You have no conscious awareness of anything outside of yourself and you only care about yourself. That's egotistical. But empaths are on the other end of the scale where they only care about everything else and what everyone else thinks and the state of the planet and being of service to everyone, but they don't think of themselves. You need to have a healthy ego where you think of yourself, you take care of yourself, you're good with your skills, so that you can then be there for other people and also for yourself. And so this is why I say for empaths, they need to embrace their ego. You need to empower yourself. The other kinds of spiritual messages are like an empath innately is a giver. They love to give and do for other people. They are of service to other people, but they're terrible at receiving. So values like being told, oh, it's better to give than to receive, does not serve an empath, because an empath gives and gives until they become depleted. And so when an empath is attracted to spiritual teachings and the spiritual teachers are telling them things like this, it actually disempowers them. So I usually, and if I'm doing a workshop or something, I will make people take a test. I have a little empath test on my website. And if they score high that they are empaths, I realize that they need empowering messages. Like they need to be told, you need to embrace your ego. You need to learn to receive. You need to do it. So basically their messages are the complete opposite of mainstream spirituality.
Yeah, and that is so very important. I think that is the takeaway for everyone who's listening. Go pick up the book, especially if you feel that you're sensitive or empathic. I think I scored 30 on your quiz.
Which is high. 30 out of 34. You're definitely what I call a mystic empath. Yes.
Definitely a mystic. You also talk about the inner mystic and really being able to tune in to the inner mystic or the inner guide, the inner voice.
Yes. Yes.
So that comes back to our sixth sense. What is your vision for this world? Is it true that 15 to 20% of the population is truly sensitive and empathic, and literally that we're biologically a little bit different?
I think it is. So so a lot of like what's written in this book is my own insights and from the people in the classes I teach and so on. But research has been done by people like Dr. Elaine Aron and Judith Orlov, and they do say, in fact, what they say is that about 20% are highly sensitive, but of that, only 2% are empaths. Now, I think it's a little more that are empaths, or at least I know I seem to be attracting a lot of empaths in my audience.
Takes one to know one, right? Birds of a feather flock together. That's what they say.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. But I also think that as we make it more acceptable to be an empath and we say that it is not a weakness, there's nothing wrong with you, then more people are coming out and admitting that they are. That's what I believe is also happening.
Yeah, I think so too. You do talk about, in a way, when we start to listen and unplug and tune into that inner voice, you talk about receiving downloads, and then you said something else very fascinating about the filters, that we have certain filters and masks that we keep up. And as soon as they get a little bit looser, we can actually hear that guidance coming through again.
So what I tell people is that, you know, we have a tendency, all of us, to give our power to the loudest voices among us, the outside world, basically. And this is why, you know, we listen to the news, we listen to people who we think of as so-called authorities, whether they are our teachers, our medical authorities, our governments, and we give them our power. But if you look at the way that our culture delivers its messages, they're very, very fear-based. And so we end up living these very fear-based lives, and we end up taking all our cues from the outside world. What I tell empaths is that if you want to get back in touch with the fact that you are a sixth sensory being, you have to shut out the outside world for periods of time. You really do. That means shutting off the news, shutting off mainstream media, shutting off social media, and giving yourself and your mind that space and that gap to listen to your inner voice. That inner voice, that source, is communicating with you all the time. But if you are being bombarded from the outside world, you're not going to be able to hear your inner world. So that's basically what I tell people. And that's why so many people are out of touch, because they are just, you know, the voices from the outside are just so loud, and then we're just blindly following all these instructions and falling into fear. Now, when you are living in fear, when every action you take is from the fear of, oh, my body is vulnerable, I fear COVID, I fear this, I fear that, your whole life is in a state of fear. Fear is a very dense energy. It kind of creates like a filter around you. It's a very dense, heavy, lower energy. And it's very hard for your higher self and your higher voice and source to communicate through you and come through you when you're living in that fear-based state, which is why it's important to silence those voices, shut the world out, go out and sit in nature, sit on the grass, go to the beach, whatever, listen to music, or, you know, lock yourself at home for a little while, and allow yourself to decompress, sit in a bathtub, And slowly, the more you do this, the more the inner voices will start to come through.
Beautiful. Anita, we started with how you opened your book, and I'm going to end the show with the quote that you end your book with. The quote says, "Speak your truth. Open the door for a whole new way of being. Set in motion the shift our planet needs to heal and survive." So for all the sensitive and empaths out there, speak your truth. Go wherever Anita is, go say hi and follow her work. And also for the people that are not empaths, let's support this movement so that our world can become a better place. Thank you, Anita, so much for being with me here at Voice Rising.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And love.